Forex Fridays, only on Money FM 89.3.
The dollar index's recent rally is taking a bit of a breather today, but the greenback is still at some of its strongest levels against major peers in roughly 3 weeks. But Forex markets have a plate of issues to deal with. There's a potential second wave of COVID-19 infections as some countries across the world begin to gradually ease lockdown measures. There's dire economic warnings from the U.S. Fed, whispers of negative rates in the U.S., and even a side order of U.S.-China diplomatic tensions. Look, there's a lot to cover today on Forex Fridays, and for that I'm joined now by Mr. Philip Wee, the senior currency economist at DBS, to discuss. Mr. Wee, thank you so much for making some time this today. I hope you and your family remain in good health and in good spirits during these issues, and welcome to the show. Happy Friday, sir.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to join your show.
So, Philip, let's talk first about these jitters that are back in the markets. The greenback has begun to emerge once again as a safe haven of choice. Any thoughts on where the dollar might be heading and what this means for the broader basket of both G10 and emerging market currencies, especially when you take into account all those issues we just outlined a while ago?
Well, I don't believe the jitters have left the markets at all, even during the relief rally last month. Last month was really about the stimulus, so we had a very nice V-shaped bounce, you know, but stock markets can't keep going up like this. This month is a reality check on how challenging the recovery process will be. So I think the more reasonable outlook is for the stock market to go square root. I'm not so much in the camp of, you know, sell in May and go away. Mm-hmm. As for the dollar index, it's really in the range, you know. So it's been very tight, you know, between 99 and 100.5 since April. If you look at the components, you know, most of them are also pretty tight. For example, you know, Euro 108, 110, sterling is between 122, 126. So you're talking about 2%, 3% ranges. This should be expected because the Fed and the G7 central banks, you know, they have all joined hands very aggressively in March, you know. So all of them coordinated, you know, smashed rates all the way down to 0 to 0.25%. They've also launched asset purchases. For now, our baseline assumption, you know, we're following, I guess, the IMF guidance for a deep recession this year, then followed by a stronger recovery. The hope is that a silver lining, you know, is for China to lead world growth again. We have seen in the past, you know, during a recovery from a global recession, especially one that is heavily weighed by the US, the dollar will tend to be weak. So I think going to next week, you know, we should be paying attention to China's MPC, where they are paving the way for more stimulus to avert a full year recession. So, and China has also signaled that, you know, they'll probably keep the renminbi stable in a range around 7, you know, like what they did, you know, during the GFC, except that this time it's not a level, but rather a range.
We're going to be watching that closely, what happens with the National People's Congress next week. But we stay with the Fed right now because the Fed once again shot down the prospect of negative rates, although they didn't really close the door on that. When you look at Fed fund futures, it seems that they're pricing a potential scenario of negative rates sometime next year in the US. Do you think that negative rates have been effective at all in stimulating growth? And what kind of negative distortions might happen if the Fed decides to dabble in this?
Well, EU and Japan, they've been the ones who experimented most with negative rates. So, which is seen as a tax on savers and also a risk for the, you know, smaller and weaker banks. But I think we have to look at today in context. You know, most governments are trying to flatten the coronavirus. You know, so we still don't have a vaccine, but, you know, we're trying to flatten this without flattening the economies. So the reality is that the longer the lockdown, the higher the risk of insolvencies. And, you know, so and the private sector, both consumers and corporates, you know, they are right now held in suspended animation. And reopening economies are also are going to be slow in phases, subject to conditions. Like, for example, if you look at New Zealand, you know, they're moving to level 2, you know, so, but even, you know, even so, they've indicated that they will not move, you know, they will stay at level 1 until a vaccine is found. So level 1 means that you're still operating suboptimally around, you know, 90 to 95%. So the governments have to step up the stimulus to support growth. And I think the role central banks play, you know, is by holding the borrowing costs low. So, but, you know, you've seen some central banks like RBA, they have chosen to achieve this by targeting, you know, the 3-year bond yield at around 0.25%.
We're still speaking to Mr. Philip Wee, the current senior currency economist at DBS here on Forex Fridays. The other side of the coin, whenever we talk about the Federal Reserve, Mr. Wee, is the idea of QE unlimited. They seem to have said that they're going to do whatever it takes. They've unleashed the monetary bazooka at global markets, actually. But the Fed's balance sheet has ballooned and might continue to balloon. What's the worst that can happen if they keep these balance sheets bloated? And will the Fed be under pressure to eventually reduce this later on? Basically, are there any particular risks if the Fed's balance sheet actually stays this big? And could it potentially blow up in some shape or form for not just forex markets, but markets and economies in general?
I think this is a question that's pretty hard to answer. But if you look at where we are, this is where central bank guidance, I think, will come in, very important. And most of them have pledged, you know, to keep rates low into probably 2022 or 2023 until, you know, most of the economies have returned to normal. Well, as for bloated central bank balance sheets, the BOJ has the largest, you know, at more than 100% of GDP. So we have many pessimists who have been waiting forever for an accident to happen. They're still waiting. So I think when it comes to, say, the dollar and all the other G7 currencies, you know, the lesson from the Great Depression is that it all comes down enough to confidence. So as long as that confidence is held, you know, and that, you know, the investors think that you're doing the right thing and have to address the right situation, then, you know, then you don't have a run, you know, on your currency. But I don't think we're there yet, but certainly something that everyone will be paying attention to.
We talk about funding squeezes for dollars, which spooked markets last March. And while there is that swap facility established by the MAS, they have cautioned recently that they're still closely watching greenback supplies. In fact, we've seen the Singapore dollar, though it has stabilized a little bit, it's also weakened quite significantly over the last, or seen weakness pressures at least recently also. How does this impact the outlook on the Singapore dollar, especially given the MAS's recent flagging of these greenback supplies and potential funding squeezes? Is this affecting your outlook on the local currency at all?
Not at the moment, but we certainly will be paying attention. But at the moment, I'm following two historical parallels. The first one, which is, we're quite close, that's the GFC. We have seen the two emergency effect cuts, QE, and, you know, Singapore, we have eased the SINGNIA policy. But at the moment, the SINGNIA is still not in the upper half. It's still just slightly below the midpoint of the band. So during the GFC, after the lowering of the band, you know, it shifted from the lower into the upper half, so which signaled the recovery. So this is something that hasn't come in for this cycle. A lot to do with the fact that a lot of uncertainties with regards to returning the economy to normal. Okay, the second one, you know, I guess where the dollar funding squeezes, you know, the worry. The second parallel is the Asian crisis to tech recession. Okay, so that's a cycle where we have, you know, followed quite closely from currency war, the recovery into a US rate hike cycle, then a 10-year bond yield fell below Fed funds, and then the Fed cut rates and cut even more, and we went to a recession. But what came after that, let's say back then, was the US corporate accounting, or if you like, the corporate malfeasance. So, which is actually a corporate insolvency story. So this is where, you know, I think this is where the credit markets are concerned with regards, you know, to, you know, the possible weakness in this sector during the recovery.
We're still speaking to Mr. Philip Wee, the senior currency economist at DBS today on Forex Fridays. I do want to use this report that I read earlier this week about Bank of America actually highlighting that the carry trade on the Hong Kong dollar was attractive, but that the differentials might start to tighten. Now, broadly speaking, we're seeing a lot of interest rates starting to come down significantly and perhaps making it very difficult to look for possible carry trades or interest rate differentials. Are there any possible opportunities out there to carry trades if interest rates continue to come down across the board and seems to be this race to the bottom.
Let's start with the Hong Kong dollar. I know,
sure.
I first find that very interesting. The math is really straightforward, you know, for the carry trade in Hong Kong dollar. They have a convertibility band for the peg, which is about 1.3% wide, you know, between 775 and 785. So right now, the differential, the Hong Kong US differential is positive. It's about, you know, 0.8%. So that's more than half the band. And, you know, Hong Kong has started intervening to support the stronger side of the band, suggesting that any rebound will be limited probably to the mid-band. So, you know, the last time we've seen the Hong Kong dollar weaken from the strong to the weak side of the band was during the 2017 and 18. So that was when the Fed was hiking, you know, by 3 to 4 hikes a year. And we definitely don't have that today. Okay, the carry trades have resumed because exchange rates have, you know, tightened into a flat and tight range. Then after the recovery in April, the most impressive carry trade, I would say, you know, was the IDR, but this was mostly because it was the hardest hit in Asia. And also that, more importantly, the BI succeeded in getting a $60 billion, you know, swap line from the Fed. This went a long way to stabilize the currency. As to who's next, we're now paying close attention to the Thai baht. So yes, already recovered, you know, somewhat, but it's still pretty weak. But, you know, Thailand is seen as a potential candidate to be the first to fully open its economy by mid-June.
Let's shift our attention now, Mr. Wee, to the outlook out in Europe and talk about a bloc that is struggling to come up with a coherent response against the COVID-19 pandemic. It seems to be the European Union. The euro itself has seen a lot of weakness recently, or a lot of challenges to it. But the British pound also, after they reported one of their worst first quarters in recent memory in terms of GDP contractions, also seeming fairly challenged at the moment. If we were to compare and contrast these two eurozone currencies, who do you think might be in for more downside risk?
Okay, let's step back a bit. Europe is actually more resilient than sterling, you know, during the virus. So at its worst point in March, you know, euro depreciated by less than 5%. You know, sterling actually collapsed by about 14%. That's why its recovery, you know, from late March to early April was pretty impressive. But, you know, both currencies have settled in the ranges like I spelled earlier, but the range for sterling is wider at 3.5%, you know, versus 2% for euro. And if you look at, let's say, the CFTC data and how speculators have been positioning, that right now more longs than short positions in euro. So the reverse for sterling, where there are more shorts, you know, than longs. I'm trying not to read too much, you know, so because these positions are still pretty small and not large like what we've seen going into the UK elections or the key Brexit events, you know, last year. But nonetheless, you know, this euro sterling has moved into a higher 0.88 to 0.89 range, you know, from the 87.88 that we've seen in the past month. So between the two, you know, I guess, you know, the story is still leaning against UK. UK has not provided a coherent or credible policy to get ahead of the virus. Post-Brexit talks, you know, on the future relationship, the UK with the EU, they have still been rocky. And I guess what's coming ahead is that the window is closing to extend the Brexit transition, you know, by the 30th of June deadline. So without which, you know, the risk of a hard Brexit, you know, will not go away.
Mr. Philip Wee, Senior Currency Economist at DBS, thank you so much for spending some time with us today on Forex Fridays. And I'm glad to hear you and your family are still in good health and staying safe. I hope that continues. Take care, sir.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.
Thank you for your time, sir.